poor. We're poor. Ashe.
Ashe.
We're poor to the creative spirit, the great Ashe out of which we all emerge. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren, their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who great the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Mande civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shilluk, the Nuer. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know, as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who, finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Puerto Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward Coast. We found them in these places, learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God," or "Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand, and who sit here, buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with the Dinkra symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions. The children of those who could not be killed, we pour. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, "Stop! No more! We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths." We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names. Haywood Carr.
Porter Griffin.
Thomas Lee Jr.
Evelyn Glover.
Joe Freeman. Rodney Cox.
We pour to the names that we hold collective. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us, for your children and children's children? Let's say some of those famous names.
Malcolm X,
John Henry Clark, John Jackson, Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this space and speak your name.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with your host, Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister Dee Dee Connors. Sankofa Council Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Reach out to them at sankofacouncilmke@gmail.com. I repeat, sankofacouncilmke@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived, so just go to www.timeforanawakening, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
Welcome. Thank you. This is Dr. Janine James, and I'm here today with our Sankofa Council members and our host, Brother Charles Robinson, and also Sister Dee Dee Conley. Doc, we're so happy to have you here with us today. And Brother Charles.
Yes.
Well, Sister Dee Dee just wants to say welcome, family.
Brother Charles, you're going to bring us into our introduction?
Oh, yes. I am very, very honored and proud of this young man. His name is Damar Walker, who's the artistic director of the Kothi Dance Company. He's a Milwaukee native. He attended Green Bay Avenue, Zimblocki, and Golden Meier Elementary Schools. He relocated to Pine Bluff, Arkansas, as a teenager, where he attended Watson Chapel High School and later graduated from the University of Central Arkansas with a degree in communications with an emphasis in TV news production. Since 2014, Mr. Walker has been an associate lecturer of African Diaspora Dance at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, Tech School of the Arts and Department of Dance. DeMar has performed with Wild Space Dance Company and Fist and Heel Performance Group. He has traveled to the countries of Guinea and Senegal to train, research, and perform in international workshops with Youssef Kumbasa, Patrick Ongani, and Alexandra Sutton, Thomas Talwa, Presto Eco Desab. DeMar is a contributor to the publication entitled Black in the Middle, an anthology of Black Midwest. And in the fall of 2021, he directed and released his first dance short film, The Beckoning, which has screened in Milwaukee Film Festival, Dance on Screen, Alabama Film Festival, and the Dance is Activism Film Festival. So this young man has accomplished quite a bit. When I met him at Sherman Park a couple of weeks ago, I had no idea that he had this kind of history behind him because he looked so young. So at this time, why don't we begin our discussion? DeMar?
Yes, Mr. Robinson. How you doing? That was a beautiful introduction. I appreciate it so much. Thank you for having me this evening.
Yeah, I'm really excited about anything associated with Kofi. I ran into Kofi in 1971, and I was so impressed with that. And now to run into you, this is like 50 years later, and you're now the new artistic director.
Yes, I am. To even hear you say, you know, you became acquainted with the company in 1971 is so beautiful, and just reassures the cultural institution that Kofi is. We celebrated our 52nd birthday last month, and, you know, that's a really impressive feat for an arts organization, especially a Black arts organization, synonymous with our city. So it's a beautiful thing. It's truly a beautiful thing.
And I was reading through the history of Kofi, and it seems like Kofi was one of the first dance companies in America, right? It was like one of the first three dance companies, African dance companies in America?
Yes. Upon research, I think that is correct. We are one of the first that specializes in specifically African diasporic dance and musical form. Yeah, I mean, that's huge, right, Mr. Robinson?
Man, you know, I just graduated from undergraduate school, and back in those days, we were protesting for relevant courses, and actually, I was on the curriculum committee at Whitewater, and one of our demands was to have relevant courses, and we were pushing for having like Swahili be available for students to learn and things like that. And, you know, we ended up getting a minor degree in African American studies out of those protests. And then right after that, I took a job in Milwaukee, and I was a school teacher. And that's when I discovered Kofi. Kofi did a production that I still remember it. It was called To All Things Black and Beautiful. And that was during the time when people were still wearing, you know, afros and dashikis, and there was just love in the air everywhere. You know, all of the music was about love ballads and things like that. That was a short time period where our community was just full of soul and love, and we were recapturing our art. And Kofi, I remember, To All Things Black and Beautiful at Parkman Junior High School is now called Andrew Douglas Middle School. But that was the cultural center of Milwaukee back in the day. Well, you weren't even born back in those days. Whatever you were. But those were great times.
Yeah, I wasn't born during that time. But I will say, Mr. Robinson, that, you know, everything that you mentioned about sort of that reconnection with, you know, culture and us, you know, demanding more from a lot of, you know, educational institutions, primarily white educational institutions, and all of that energy that you all had, I feel is very much in the air today. You know, thinking about the young people on college campuses and, you know, their demands of, you know, having more Black faculty and, you know, creating Black student unions and, you know, we're a little bit more stylish. You know, I don't know, that could be arguable. You know, y'all were pretty fly back then, but, you know, I think with just, you know, the way that we're rocking our hair, young people, you know, rocking the fros and the locks and, you know, and people are wearing dashikis again and, you know, and kufis and, you know, geles and, you know, all of that stuff. It's still very much a part of who we are. I think it's just about a cycle that I think things come around sort of cyclically, you know, circularly. And that's a beautiful thing to be able to be a part of, you know, what this energy is today.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I back in, I think it was 2011, I had the opportunity to see an African dance production. I think it was called We Are the Drum. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am familiar with We Are the Drum. Shout out to Capita Production.
Yeah, you know, I was so impressed with the level of talent and skill of these young people. And, you know, and before that, and this is way before you were born, there was another production called Don't Bother Me, I Can't Cope. And some people, friends of mine, took me to see that. It was like a Broadway production. And on my birthday, Don't Bother Me, I Can't Cope. Are you familiar with that by chance?
That I am not familiar with Don't Bother Me.
It won a lot of awards. But that here again, that was back in the 70s. But, you know, To All Things Black and Beautiful was a production, one of the first productions of Kofi, and it just shows so much talent. Lord Barbee, who was a local attorney, he was also a part of our state legislature here. He was actually in that performance as well. I ran into to Fern in the post office, and we started reminiscing, and we stood up in the post office for about a half an hour talking about those good old days when they started out. But now this is a new day. And, you know, true to our name, Sankofa, Council of Elders, are you familiar with the meaning of Sankofa?
Oh, yes, I am, sir. Yes, I am. Interestingly enough, Kofi did a virtual programming series last year entitled Sankofa, where we highlighted current company members and alumni of our company. And it was just a way to sort of, you know, firmly plant ourselves in this work, the current generation, but also, you know, pay respect to the amazing legacy that has, you know, brought us here. So, yes, I'm very familiar with the Sankofa principle.
Wow, I love that. And so now we just did a little reminiscing about the past. Now, you know, going forward, you are the artistic director of Kofi. And
it comes with a lot of weight, huh?
You have some big shoes to fill, but Fern is a legend. She's a legend.
You know, slight work, Mr. Robinson, slight work.
Oh, yeah. Well, so I'm just curious, what attracted you to the arts and in particular dance? And how early were you attracted to dance?
I think everyone has their thing, you know, Mr. Robinson. And I think dance has always been a part of my life. You know, I don't have like a specific moment where it was just like, wow. I do know a moment where I said to myself I wanted to pursue it professionally, but I was always the kid that was just very artistic. Of course, I danced, I sang, I wrote a lot, poetry and short stories, I was always somewhere drawing. So I was always very much drawn to a lot of creative expression. And I was the kid who would pretty much study the music videos back when, you know, BET and MTV actually played music videos. And just like learned the dance moves. And I was always the one in the neighborhood. I grew up in Harambe, actually, on First Street between Locust and Chambers. So those are my stomping grounds. But I grew up seeing my maternal parents a lot, my grandparents, and spending a lot of time over there. But I was always in there, like in the front yard with like my cousins, Mr. Robinson, and like just making up dances and dancing in their yard and dancing in the middle of the street. And it was just always a part of me, you know. Gravitated towards, for sure. But I do remember the moment where I said to myself I wanted to pursue dance professionally, and that was when I saw the HBO special of Janet Jackson's Velvet Rope Tour, and I was a teenager during that time, living in Arkansas, and sitting in between my parents and just being completely mesmerized. And I said, I think this is what I want to do. Interestingly enough, Kofi was my introduction specifically to West African dance. My aunt used to be an MPS teacher.
What's her name? What's her name?
Her name is Diane Freeman.
I'm trying to, because, you know, I taught for MPS too many years ago. I was wondering if I might have known her. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no. No worries. Milwaukee History taught at what was then, what is now, I should say, I think Rufus King Middle School, which was then, during my time, Malcolm X Academy, which was prior to that, Fulton Middle School.
That's exactly the school I taught at for 2 years.
After really?
That's the school. I was the first teacher to graduate. I was the first person to graduate from Robert Fulton to come back and teach there. So I ended up teaching with my teachers. I was, you know, we were on the same staff together. But yeah, go ahead.
So I remember my mom trying to figure out what to do with me, like most parents during the summer. And she asked my aunt if I could possibly go to summer school. And I got enrolled, and I don't remember anything I learned, but I specifically remember being completely mesmerized, you know? Yes. It was something about the drums, it was something about the movement, it was something about the way that, you know, the instructors carried themselves, you know, with so much pride and just the sense of being able to own the room, but not in a very sort of vocal way, just very, very self-assured, and that stuck with me. You know, you mentioned in my bio that I moved to Arkansas and went to school in Arkansas, but I moved back to Milwaukee in 2008. That looming thought in the back of my mind about pursuing dance professionally. And I said, if I want to really do this, I need to actually do it. Because, you know, by that time I was, you know, I had graduated from school. So, you know, we're talking about dancing professionally. You know, you're over the hill when, you know, you're like, in your early 20s sometimes. And I said, well, I always felt good in my body. And like I said, so self-assured when I did specifically West African dance. And interestingly enough, moving back to the city, I found out that the company had an audition. I went to the audition, Mr. Robinson. I didn't know what I was doing. I just remember showing up late. The audition was at Lincoln Middle School. They put a number on my back. I got on the floor. I remember specifically Mama Fern sitting behind the table at the time. And, you know, once it was over, they did their deliberations. And, you know, I'm just peeping everything. And people are leaving and saying they didn't make it. And I'm, like, super confused, thinking to myself, like, well, I should have left by now. And so it was like a few people. There were a few people left. I think it was maybe about six of us. And they brought us into the room, and they announced that they wanted to have me as a trainee for the company. And I was completely speechless, Mr. Robinson. Wow. Like, my jaw was on the floor. And I remember at the time, former musical director Terrence Spencer, he was like, "Congratulations, little man." And I couldn't even really take in the moment because I was just so surprised. But yeah, that's the history. And as they say, you know, I've been here ever since.
Well, evidently it was fortuitous for you to be in this position, and we're so glad that you know, that you're there. You know, when I think about Robert Fulton Junior High School, and you know, that school has 1,600 students, where the capacity was only 900 at the time I was there. That's an example of structural and systemic racism right there.
Wow.
When you have 700 more students in a school that, you know, than you're supposed to, of course, you're not going to have very much learning going on. And you're going to have a lot of fights there, too. And there was always fights.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I was so unimpressed as a first-year student that I, you know, after my second year, I went to law school and I was going to come back and run for school board. And I never did that. I never followed through with that. But, you know, during my first year, we did contact MPS and petition some relief, because that was just too many kids and too many students in one building. So they gave us 8th Street School. So they cleaned up a school which wasn't in use on 8th and Michigan. And I brought my student teaching notes and shared it with the coordinators of the building, and we created team teaching. And we used the school without walls concept, and we went from the bottom to the top in 1 year in statistics. We were rivaling schools like Boys Tech at the time. But,
wow.
You know, and after my second year, I, you know, like I said, I was so unimpressed and frustrated with education. I was working on a master's degree for school psychology at the time. And when I saw what the school psychologists were doing, I said, no, I don't want to do that. But, you know, the arts, if we could bring the arts in school, like you were inspired by the arts through, you know, seeing Kofi perform. And right now, it seems like the budget for many of the public school systems throughout the country don't accommodate the arts. I just read not too long ago, there's $103 billion being allocated by the White House. They have a blueprint. $103 billion earmarked for education, according to Biden's blueprint. I'm wondering how much of that money are they going to put into the arts?
You know, if it were up to me, I would allocate probably more than half of it. It's the entry point, Mr. Robinson. You know?
Yes, I know.
For our children, it's what they know. It's who they are, because it's who we are, and it's that way for them to really get a sense of that communal learning, like you mentioned about the teaching with no walls and being able to be a part of something that's greater than yourself. You know, I've had the opportunity to teach, you know, in various MPS sites. And one of the things that's always been interesting to me is the kids that gravitate to what it is that we do, whether it's the drums, the dancing, where it gives them such a means to even go throughout the rest of the school day, you know?
Well, you know, the closest I got to dance was gymnastics. I was on the gymnastics team. And, and you know, but, you know, what I really loved about school, I mean, to be honest about it, we had beautiful Black teachers. And there was this one teacher, Mr. Cousins. He actually created, he took us downtown to the library, and we did debates, and we did research for our debates. And so we got outside of the building and into the real world. And we were debating like real life situations, like banning testing of nuclear arms in the atmosphere, I specifically remember. But it was through, you know, those teachers who made education come alive. You know, he would recite parts of the Declaration of Independence. I mean, this guy, and I think he ended up leaving. He might have been right out of Milwaukee, and he ended up in Chicago. And someone told me that he became a very popular politician in the Chicago area for many years. But, you know, we need to bring, make education live. In my first year, we created a program called the Expansion of Educational Experiences. It was a pilot project, taking kids outside of the classroom. There was a play. I wanted my students to see Ceremonies and Dark Old Men. I don't know if you ever saw that play. But we couldn't.
Yes, I have.
We couldn't. I was Bobby. I was a part of, I played Bobby. And we put it on in Whitewater. And it was such a great theatrical experience. I thought if my students who were having problems reading, I thought that would be one way to get them attracted to reading, if I could get them inspired by the theater. And I couldn't get a field trip permission slip, because you have to do that 30 days in advance. I had a little yellow Cougar, 72 Cougar. I busted my back and forth, man. It was illegal, and I would have gotten fired if they would have found out about it. But I was teaching in this program. It was a MAC program. They put all the bad kids in one program, in one room, and they called it a MAC program. And so we had a little more leeway, you know, and we had a psychologist, a social worker, and a full-time counselor in that MAC program, and two teachers. And that was my first year teaching. But one of the students who challenged me physically in the classroom, his name is McAfee. McAfee ended up doing props for Hansberry Sands. I couldn't believe it when I heard that McAfee was working in the theater. His name was James McAfee. But he ran home to get his mother's shotgun because we had a confrontation in the classroom. They were playing dice, shooting dice in the back of the room. And I took the dice, right? And then he challenged me physically, and you know, I had to put him on the ground. I didn't hurt him, but he was so embarrassed. He was bigger than me, by the way. He's a big kid. I just found out earlier this year that he actually is heavily involved in acting right now.
And, oh, nice.
And he, I don't know if he's written, I don't know if he's a playwright exactly, but it was through that experience when he saw Ceremonies and Dark Old Men. That's what, you know, transformed him.
I mean, it's that story is just a testament to how powerful the arts are. You know, Mr. Robinson, you know, I mean, I was going to mention specifically working at a school, and this one little girl, a third grader, I could tell that she wasn't excited about school as much as it was about being able to come take dance class with us on Monday and Wednesday morning, you know? And I would see the way that her face would light up when she would enter the gym, and then literally her whole mood changed when she would have to go back to the classroom. And I think it's great that now people understand the importance of arts integrated curriculum. You know, we can keep reiterating the idea of the importance of the sciences and, you know, technology and engineering and math and things like that. And, you know, these concepts of STEM, right? But what does it look like for, you know, art to be infused within that, you know, when people are more so leaning into the idea of the STEAM curriculum, right?
Exactly.
So that science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. And, you know, I think about what it is that we do, and we talk about this all the time. You know, dance is all of that.
Yes.
Dance is science. It's the technology, the employing of the body, right? It's the engineering and the way that, you know, so much of what we do is very much representative of daily life for Black people. You know, it's the math. You know, we teach kids, you know, different languages and you know, teaching them how to count the 1 to 10 and mundane, right? So, you know, it's all of those things. And I think once we're able to get a better understanding, as a nation with the importance of how art will always be the entry point, for, you know, a lot of socio-cultural engagement, but also just, you know, social change, I think, we'll be better off because our kids need it. It's so vital. They need that creative outlet, you know, and even if they don't become dancers, just based on what it is that we're able to teach them, you know, within a structure to be able to give them the incentive to think so imaginatively, right? It's just so necessary for them.
You know, now there's a lot of reading, a lot of research out about like how to deal with trauma in our bodies. And, you know, it's clear now that all of us have been traumatized and we have trauma in our bodies, which has been handed down for generations epigenetically, right? And so when I look at what were our ancestors doing to metabolize or process the trauma in their bodies, where they were dancing. You know, like I read this book, The Healing Wisdom of Africa, written by Maladoma Somme. I don't know if you're familiar with him. But, you know, when you look at the rituals and ceremonies, there was a guy, an anthropologist named Bill Urey, who did research on the San Bushmen on the Kalahari and how they do peacemaking. And the first thing they do is a three-step process. They celebrate through dancing and drumming until somebody goes into a trance. Are you familiar with trance dance? Anyway, when someone goes into a trance, that's like a clue that the ancestors are present to guide them through how to resolve that conflict in the village. Because, you know, they, harboring unresolved conflict is a sin. Because they live on a desert, so everybody have to work together harmoniously for their survival. So, like, the first step of that three-step process is they sing and dance and drum. So there's something in the dancing and drumming that has a healing impact on our bodies. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. You know, dance, music, all of these cultural expressions, they are practices, right? And, you know, I would argue that for Black people specifically, because of, you know, my time on this earth, you know, I was, you know, born and raised here, you know, in this country. So I think about the idea of dance being the most immediate way for Black people to liberate ourselves. Because I think about often how, for Black people, we're always extending ourselves, even in the way that we employ our bodies, to do other things for other people's and structures, right?
Right.
So, you know, that dancing, even if it's one of those things where, you know, grandma hitting, you know, a jig while she in the kitchen cooking, that's a meditation.
Yes.
You know, to where she's able to ground herself, center herself back to herself, right? The self meeting the self, you know, the spiritual meeting the physical, you know, the emotional, and then how that output then becomes that vibration that permeates within the family, right? You know, right. Because ultimately, if she's cooking, that means she's feeling good, so the food's going to be good, right?
Right. That's true.
You know, and how it feeds, you know, people like me who grew up eating, I would argue my grandmother has the best greens and potato salad, you know, and I'm sure a lot of other people would say the same thing, but, you know, that came from me listening to my grandmother while she was, you know, slicing peaches when she was making cobbler, and I would just listen to her hum. And more than likely, those hums were, you know, spirituals, right? So that's that way for us to bring ourselves back to ourselves. And it's a beautiful thing. So, you know, whether it's trans, you know, whatever the type of dancing it is, that's who we are. And we have to be more appreciative and bring more, have a better understanding so we can value it and cherish it more.
Yeah, I think we have retained naturally a lot of those practices, as you call it. But we don't recognize it as an Afrocentric practice.
No, we don't. We don't. But everything that we do is rooted from the continent. Mm-hmm. You know, like one of the major things that I love about teaching dance to young people is to reiterate the idea that what you think that you're doing really isn't new. It comes from a lineage.
Yes.
You know, nothing is new that is new that is new. And I can trace literally social dances from the continent, specifically West Africa, to the stuff that they're doing that young people are getting likes for on like TikTok and Instagram. And that freaks them out because they're like, wait a minute, Mr. DeMar, you mean to tell me that this was being done, you know, centuries ago on the continent? And I'm like, that idea of the employing of the body and being able to bend our knees to be more grounded and rooted, and how that shows up and manifests in, like I said, our daily lives, you know, all of that stuff is very much a part of the dancing and then the music. You know, I tell some of my students that I teach in college, you know, that in order for you to get lifted, like, you got to be rooted in something. So, you know, how Black folks say, you know, to get up, you got to get down.
Yeah.
And the students are like, oh, my gosh, DeMar, what do you mean by that? And I say, the way that we dance is about that feeling of being elevated, right? But more so, when we do it, we like to bug and we bend our knees. We jig. We get it in. And that's a philosophy that I think most people don't recognize, and I think for most Black people they don't understand that, because it's really about them getting into the idea and the ideas of dance. And for all of us, the majority of us, we're just doing it, but we're right. not really thinking about it, which is great. But, you know, this is the beauty of being able to teach, you know, art forms like this.
Well, you know, speaking of teaching, there's an ancestral profile that Dr. Janine James wants to share with the listening audience. Dr. James, are you available to do that now?
I am, and I was so excited with this assignment. And in the spirit and style of our sister Didi, we are going to learn about Catherine Mary Dunham, who was born in June of 1909. She was born in my hometown of Chicago, Illinois.
Wow.
She is an African American dancer, choreographer, creator of Dunham Techniques, author, educator, and anthropologist, and least but all, social activist. Now, we're talking about somebody who was born in 1909, yeah. and she was attending the University of Chicago, mm-hmm. and some of the people who mentored her were teaching her about anthropology. And this mm-hmm. is when she ultimately got her bachelor's degree, and then later a master's thesis, as she began to learn about other cultures mm-hmm. through African dance and music. And she had in the 1930s her own dance company. So when we talk about Kofi, we've got to think about Catherine Dunham, who in Chicago had a dance company, and that dance company was all over the world. They traveled all over the world with their works and their creations, and they were heavily sponsored by persons such as Rosenwald and Guggenheim. These were people who were philanthropists, but they saw the beauty of her work, the scholarly nature of how African dance and African music tells you a great deal about people. And so this is what she began to do through the dance, through the music. And we're talking almost 100 years ago. So Mr. DeMar, when you're talking about with the young people about some of the older pieces, well, we go back even further than that. And so she has been considered the matriarch and queen mother of Black dance.
Yeah.
This is an exciting person. There's so much to tell about Catherine Dunham. We could use up a whole show to talk about that. Sister Dee Dee, we could really go into a lot about this person, but let's move ourselves into the future. But the future is you, Mr. DeMar, as you are working with these young people and recognizing that there is energy, there's a spirit that got us to where we are. I'm going to use this time also to know that we have our ancestral profile, but we also have a time that we use where we recognize our sponsor, as well as encouraging others to be sponsors of our program. So we haven't forgotten our conversations that we're having with Mr. DeMar, and we are so fortunate to have him here with us today to bring us up to what's currently relevant as it relates to the arts and using the word anthropology that was actually coined by an African-American woman. So we have done tremendous things that go beyond the fact that we're able to do some movement. We are able to do that, but there is some logic behind it. There's some relevance to the movement, to the music, as it helps us to understand our history, our African history. And I'm excited that this is being spread to other people, other cultures, to learn from those things that we've already known. But let me use this time also. We have a sponsor, which is EDOC Advice. It's a website created to provide a place to go to get answers to your health or medical concerns. The questions are answered by health professionals and those who are knowledgeable about helping you make decisions about your personal health that makes sense to you. We do not replace your health professional or provide you care, but we can help you to become a better consumer so that you can get the best information to make a truly informed decision. We network with other health professionals throughout the country and bring that information to you. We welcome those of you who would like to be sponsors for this program, Sankofa Council of Milwaukee, and we ask you to please, you may reach us through our email address, which is Sankofa Council, MKE gmail.com. So if you have a book you'd like to promote or some other activity that you'd like to promote or business, please consider being a sponsor for this program, the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee, that is bringing to you today Mr. DeMar Walker, who is the artistic director of the Kothi Dance Company. And we have just a few minutes before we go to the top of the hour, and I see that we have a person who is maybe interested with a question that they'd like to share with us or a comment. And I'm looking at the number 505-340. Do you have a question or comment for us today, or Mr. DeMar Walker? Do you have a question or comment for us? Well, perhaps you're listening and you'll come in. We'll ask, check later and see if you have a question for us. But we're very happy to have you. Mr. Walker, I'm sure that this role that you've had as artistic director has really opened your horizons to things that you might not have previously even considered exploring. Can you tell us something about what that might have been?
Yeah, for sure, Dr. James. Before I actually answer that question, I just want to make sure that I acknowledge the Catherine Dunham question. I appreciate the fact that you mentioned Ms. Dunham specifically because, you know, she is known internationally, but I want to acknowledge the fact that she is a Black Midwestern treasure, you know, and we love and value that because, you know, oftentimes when people think of Black history, typically they leave out the Black Midwest with the exceptions of, you know, Chicago and Detroit. But, you know, she had a school in East St. Louis. Interestingly enough, Mama Fern Calker, our founder, was a student of Miss Dunham. She has pictures with her.
Wow, I have no idea.
Yes. One of my teachers, shout out to Felicia Pender-Farron. There's a beautiful picture in our archive of her braiding Miss Dunham's hair.
Beautiful.
I mean, she was absolutely amazing. And, you know, to hear the stories that Mama Fern has told me about Miss Dunham, you know, it just lets me know how connected we all are, and to know that I am of that lineage, and it's such a beautiful, beautiful thing, you know. And I'm really, really proud of that. So, you know, thank you so much for acknowledging Ms. Dunham during the show. But with that being said, I will say that you're right. I never anticipated doing the things that I've been able to do, stepping into pursuing my dance career as well as this role of being artistic director. You know, I've been able to go to Africa, you know, twice, and to be able to study with, you know, some of the most, you know, internationally renowned teachers. I'm just really, really blessed and fortunate in that way. And I never thought that I would be teaching kids, let alone teaching college students. But I actually have a blast teaching young people because I think it really centers around what the organization's mission is. You know, we got right into the conversation, you know, Dr. James and Mr. Robinson. I didn't even mention, you know, Kothi's mission and, you know, what Kothi's name actually is. You know, Kothi comes from the Shebro language of Sierra Leone, West Africa. It means to think, to seek, and to go black, as in black culture. And, you know, our mission is to preserve, promote, and uplift the dance and musical forms of Africa and its diaspora. And I think the best way that I feel I've been able to do that in this work is through educating young people, specifically our children's ensemble, Tonko Thi. You know, it ranges in ages from 6 to 16. And, you know, we take those young people and we center the tenets around, of course, artistic development, but self-discipline, teamwork, you know, cultural awareness. And we're really, really proud of the work that we do with them. I mean, I'm like the biggest fan. I sometimes get over.
Mr. Walker, I'm going to need to interrupt you because we're getting ready for our top of the hour, and we can continue that when we get back from this our announcements. So we'll go into top of the hour.
Yes,
absolutely. Right. And look like 505 is unmuted
Kofi
now.
Kofi is a part, a huge part of my life. I've been doing Kofi, I've been doing dance for 55 years. I started when I was very young. So dance is, I can't imagine my life without it. Even if I was not able to dance physically anymore, I would be dancing in my head and I'd be writing or whatever. So that it's not an option for me. So Kofi, to me, is even when I don't feel like being here, if I'm not here, I feel guilty because I'm not here. It's like that.
Time for an awakening media lineup. All about times or Eastern Standard. On Mondays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspective with host Brother Oshie. On Monday evening from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds with host Brother Jihad Ahmed. On Monday evenings from 8 to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central with hosts Dr. Mawaya Cambone and Sister Nataki Cambone. on Monday evenings from 9 to 10 p.m. on the first and third Mondays of each month. Conversation Reparations. Conversation Reparations. On Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers. On Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives with host Brother Ocean. On Fridays, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives with host Brother Ocean. From 8 to 10 p.m. on Friday evenings, Time for an Awakening with host Brother Elliot Booker and his co-host Brother Richard. On Saturdays, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Black Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And at 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Saturday evening, the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with host Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.D. Conley. And on Sunday, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Time for an Awakening, host Brother Elliot and his co-host Brother Richard. These are our lineup times. We thank you for your patronage, and please, by all means, check us out. You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with your host, Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.D. Conley. Sankofa Council Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Reach out to them at Sankofa Council MKE at gmail.com. I repeat, Sankofa Council MKE at gmail.com. All of our programs are archived, so just go to www.timeforanawakening, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
You know, Dr. James, we were talking so much and we got so deep in our conversation, we forgot to include Sister Dee Dee. Sister Dee Dee, are you available?
Yes, I am. You know, it was sounding so good, and I didn't have the heart. And Dr. James, and she knows I don't like to kind of like just interrupt, but it was so good and so interesting. And I just love what Dr. James had said. She kind of really put it in for me, and I love that. But I also, even with Catherine Dunham, we cannot forget also Miss Pearl Primus, P-R-I-M-U-S. She was another great African dancer. And I think we need to teach our children, grandchildren, we need to teach our Black people this. All these people, and Catherine Dunham, she really paved the way for a lot of people. I know in my profile I was reading where in 4 years she had trained over 150 Black people. She was something else. Great, great dancer. And when you go online and just look at those pictures of those dancers dancing, and it was so many of them, because we can't leave out Miss Raven Wilkerson. Now, back when she was dancing, the KKK had threatened her and told her not to be dancing no more. They threatened her life. But just look at the people that came before us, and we can't leave out even Mitzi Copeland, you know, the young ballet dancer also. you know, and all these people inspired her. And, you know, I find it so, no, I don't find it crazy, because this is what was going on back in those days, where white folks would tell the black women, you know, that, oh, they were too heavy to dance. Their, you know, their butts were too big. They didn't have the legs and this and that. But when you, I mean, even the men dancers, oh, my God, when you look at them pictures you're talking about, that should inspire many of our young black people. And I wish it would. Instead of, I just really wish it would, so they can see something, you know, see something different. You know, I tell my granddaughter, you talk about that little stuff you be doing is art. I said, no, let granny show you art. And I just showed her those pictures. And she was like, man, look how they in the air, granny. I said, yes. I said, you know, yes, just look at that and read about them. Read about them. You know, I mean, just beautiful.
You know, just looking at history, it appears that almost every revolution or transformation in the world has been accompanied by the arts, you know, in some shape, form, or fashion. And when you mention Felicia Pender, I think, Brother DeMar, in that classroom that I taught my first year, there were two Penders in that classroom. I bet they were the brothers of Felicia, who you said was braiding. You have a picture of her braiding Miss Dunham's hair.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, this really is a small world. Because I had her two brothers in that classroom that I was telling you about my first year teaching.
Wow.
Robert Fulton. But thank you, Sister Dee Dee.
You're so welcome.
For that other knowledge, because, you know, I was not a student of dance. I was always intrigued by it. And but I never took a dance course when I was in law school. Right next to the law school was the dance. It was like a dance school. And I would, like, walk past there almost every day, and I would stop and admire the dancers dancing. They were, you know, practicing, of course. And I almost joined. I mean, I was thinking, can I fit this into my schedule? Because their bodies were so well.
Their bodies were just so buffed in the way they did. I mean, just beautiful. But I'm sorry. You know, I was listening to the young man also, and I'm just so happy and just so proud to even hear him speaking, just so glad he's on the show. And when he mentioned that Miss Catherine Dunham, how she had a school in St. Louis, I was just reading here, after her retirement from teaching in 1974, Dunham opened the Catherine Dunham Center in East St. Louis, where she spent part of her time and the other half in Haiti until her death of May 21st, 2006.
Mm-hmm.
2006. Isn't that something? Mm-hmm.
You know, talk about a history, you know.
Was she able to get past the racism at the time? Because they were hanging black people a lot, and there's a lot of resistance against, you know, black people, you know, getting higher education. And sounds like she was able to transcend all of those barriers and all that resistance.
You're right. Yeah. You know, I was just reading also where it said she had refused to perform because they didn't allow black people to buy tickets.
Wow.
She was a good activist also. And they say she, and how they have it written, they said she stood her militant ground, and she meant what she said. But them people wanted to see her perform. She was just that great with all her dancers.
She was so great, she was able to transcend the racism at the time.
That's, yes, and I met, and you know, that had to be pretty hard, because I'm sure her life probably was threatened too, you know, because that's what they do best, heal, steal, and destroy, or threaten, you know, threaten black people's lives when they're trying to come up and do on their own or do for self.
Mm-hmm. Were there any stigmas that you had to transcend Brother DeMar, when you chose to go into dancing, because it's primarily it's a woman's, you know, it's a feel for females, right? I mean,
yeah, I mean it's an art form that is primarily professionally done by women, female identified people. You know, there's still very much a stigma around men, specifically Black men, Black male identified people who dance. But what's so interesting to me is that, you know, I remember growing up and always being captivated by my dad and like my cousin, my dad, Dwayne Walker. Like he was like a really smooth mover. And my cousin was as well, Rodney Cokes. And, you know, it was just something that was very, very much them, you know, and some people could argue, you know, about the masculinity of it all. But I think what's beautiful about the dance in itself is that spirit and how that transcends gender, right?
Right.
So for me, you know, I think I still grapple with that. I would love to see more Black boys in particular in dance class. You know, something a little bit more formal. Not to say that they aren't doing it, because one of the things that I want to stress, you know, while I'm on this show is that, you know, our social dances, the things that we grew up doing, whether it was literally like the twist and the mashed potato, or if it was the Roger Rabbit and, you know, the Kid in Play, which is really the Charleston, which comes from, you know, that vernacular jazz era back in the early, you know, 1900s, you know, or if it's, you know, what the kids are doing today, like I said, on TikTok and Instagram, those are cultural forms and they have a technical base, you know, and sometimes people believe that because they are very much within the moment, right, that they don't have a technical foundation. And that's totally untrue. You know, it makes me think about going to Senegal and watching Senegalese people do Saba, which is their national dance, right? It's a cultural practice, right? But no one can just go to Senegal and just pick up Saba. It's no different than, you know, people who can come into the quote-unquote hood and they could see a person that's on Fifth and Ring do what we call banging and twanging in Milwaukee. You know, everyone just can't do it. But what I love about it is that, you know, that, like I said, the spirit of dance transcends gender. And I think if we keep that, you know, present within us, I think it can break down a lot of those barriers when it comes to expectations based on gender, because so much of this is centered in our healing and our salvation, and even the way that we mobilize and, like I said, liberate ourselves, even for that brief moment, you know, give us the autonomy and the agency to do what we can do with our body, so we can love on ourselves first and foremost, and how that can permeate on loving with each other, you know?
You know, I remember my great aunt and her boyfriend used to dance, and they would be picking each other up and throwing each other in between them. What did you call that when they go, like, over their backs and stuff?
Lindy hop.
Oh, that's it. Man, that was extraordinary. As a little kid watching that, I was just awestruck.
And once again, Mr. Robinson, something that people just can't pick up, you know, it's the food, right? Everyone just can't make really great dressing in Black Eyed Peas. They may have the recipe, you know, but that stuff has to be, you know, that stuff has to be loved and curated and marinated on, and all that's of that so energy true. And how that love goes into it, and, you know, to be able to be the recipient of all of that, that's a blessing. So, you know, it's no different than how we create the food, that brings that spirit into our dance and the way that we sing and the way that we write and the way that we just the way that we just are and how we carry ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, it's our beingness.
And preparing that food, that's an art too.
I mean it all, you know.
Yes, that's so true. Yes, that's art.
Blackness is so expansive, you know?
And so beautiful.
It's so expansive that people are able to extract it as much as they can to co-opt it and monetize off of it, you know? I mean, you just look on social media today and you see all, you know, like these white you know, social media influencers and how they're, you know, doing black dances and, you know, and they're getting money from it. And, you know, these are major, major things, you know. And I think what's beautiful about this time also is just sort of that reclaiming of all of us, specifically black people, and having others understand, first and foremost for ourselves, that our culture is American culture.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Yeah, they copied us quite a bit. You know, if we could begin to make the connection between the healing and dance, like there's a book written by Rezma Manikin. I don't know if you read it. It's called My Grandmother's Hands.
Mm-hmm.
And after each chapter, he has processes that you could practice to metabolize and process the trauma in our bodies, because all of us have trauma in our bodies. And he has like mindfulness practices and things associated with, you know, breathing techniques to deal with, you know, with the trauma in our bodies. If we could bring dance to public education, just think how much better we will be able to intentionally heal ourselves.
Yes. It's no different than the third grade.
Excuse me. Yeah, we need to advocate that and bring that into public education.
I'm thinking of our history as you're speaking, and think about the persons who have been placed on the ships to transport across the ocean, and we've all been told that they are coming from different tribes and they have different languages and they're not really able to speak. But as I think about the African dance and the drummers and the music, this is something that they can have in common, even though they don't speak the same language.
And oh, wow.
We know how the music can change the mood. So imagine being chained to one another.
Yeah.
And not being able to speak, not quite sure of what's going on, but that you could imagine people communicating through music. Through the drumming sound. And certainly once they arrived on the continents, once they reached the Caribbean or America, this is something that they may have shared in common. Those who among them were the dancers, the musicians of their respective tribes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad you brought that up. Go ahead, Demar, did you have a response to that? I was thinking about the quantum physics, like there's something in the vibrations that's communicating to us in ways that we don't even know. But I can't explain it, but I...
It's definitely a feeling. I do agree that, you know, it's something really powerful about even for what we can imagine in this present day for our ancestors to be on those ships coming through the Middle Passage, and to be able to keep all of that within us and the way that it has manifested, even in, like I said, in those other cultural practices, right? Like I think about specifically the way that young women used to braid other women's hair, specifically in the ways of making like escape routes, right? During leaving the plantation. I mean, that stuff is incredibly fascinating to me.
Yeah.
You know, the way that the drum, specifically a djembe drum, has these really different sounds, but the way that they're able to articulate them to represent certain things. If you heard a call over in the other village, that means that potentially a child was being born. You know, I think about, you know, in South Africa, you know, I was doing some research on the boot dance that they do, the Isikatulu boot dance. And that was a way for the miners, when they were working in those mines, in those horrid conditions, right, to be able to communicate with each other. And the way that they would literally use their hands and their bodies, you know, to slap the sides of their boots to say, well, hey, you know, this is the time where we all need to meet up, or whatever the case may be, just to be able to communicate with each other. I think it's just brilliant to me. It's genius. And I don't even think we recognize it enough. And just thinking about those lineages, because if you're talking about that boot dance, that can be directly tied to, you know, a lot of the ham boning that, you know, we think about with jazz dance and that patting of the body, right? And
that's right.
You know, fraternities and sororities, you know, with stepping and it's a beautiful thing. It's a really, really beautiful thing. But I think, you know, it's one thing to be able to acknowledge the trauma, but what I'm really interested in is, even in the midst of all of what we've endured as a people, to know that we still are able to center our joy in all of it. And I mean, to just see those moments where like our elders are able to get in the middle of the circle and they're like, I can't do what I used to, but I'm gonna show you a little something, you know.
That's right.
I mean, it's just I can't stress enough how amazing all of that is.
When I went to Whitewater about 3 years ago for a Black Student Union reunion, no, or it might have been the 50th anniversary for Alpha Phi Alpha, because we started a chapter there. The brothers let me step with them. And it was so much fun. When I was a college student, we won the stepping contest at NIU, Northern Illinois University. But that was, it was a lot of fun, a lot of good competition too. So even, you know, with the fraternity and sorority stepping, that's another form of dance that is pretty spectacular.
I mean, we just brilliant. We do it like no other.
You know, that caller from New Mexico, I was hoping that they would chime back in, because they were muted at first and then they unmuted themselves, but now it looks like they're no longer there. Yeah, I was very curious about the languaging aspect of dance, especially the drum.
Mm-hmm.
How, you know, they could use the drum to communicate and people could understand the messages being sent. And that's just so marvelous for me. It's just mind-boggling, you know. And then a lot of those, indigenous people in Africa, they can speak at least 4 to 7 languages.
Mm-hmm.
And we only speak one
language.
Yeah, and we only speak one language here. But, you know, the beat of the drum evidently is another language that they have access to.
Yeah, I think Black folks in this country, we don't give ourselves enough credit. I definitely think we are multilingual. You know, the majority of what we've been taught is a survival tactic, you know, thinking about the way that we have to employ, you know, as much as we think we are employing, you know, like standard King's English, right? But thinking about the way that we've been able to create our own language, you know, with what we are, what we call now, people call, you know, AAVE, African American Vernacular English. Some people call it Ebonics, but you know, the way that we use be as a verb, you know, I be on the block, I be chilling, you know, that's one way that we're able to cultivate, you know, our own cultural practices. And we just got to be, I think, got to be a little bit more cognizant about cherishing that and honoring that.
Great. You know, we're looking forward to having you over here at Sherman Park on the 27th with your.
Yes.
Now, is that a performance or a practice? What exactly is that? Now, this is Sankofa in action right now. We just talked about the past, like Dr. James was saying. Now we're looking at the future. We're going forward.
Yeah.
So what is on the 27th? Can you say some more about that?
Absolutely. So the company will be hosting a outdoor class series that is entitled Kofi Around Milwaukee. And I was very adamant about doing this because with everything happening with the pandemic, and just being able to get back out, you know, specifically this summer, I said, we need to actually bring this art form to the city. So, I was able to work with my team, and we organized these classes that will happen on Sundays at 3 p.m. throughout the city. And we kick everything off on Father's Day next week, Sunday, on the 20th at Moody Park. But specifically, we will be in Sherman Park on the 27th. And this is the opportunity for people to just come out and just, like I say, get some fun, some fitness, some culture, and just to enjoy ourselves, you know, and love on each other and get reacquainted with being around each other once again and building that community, you know, and as you know, Black folks, you know, when food and music is involved.
Oh, yes.
You know, everything else that, you know, turns out just super duper great. And, yeah, I definitely specifically, wanted to have a class at Sherman Park because I felt it was important. And, you know, a lot of this was being encouraged by, a news article I read about how we have so many parks, and specifically, I think they said up to 90% of residents in the city, like Black residents in the city, are very close to a lot of the county parks, but they don't access them, you know? Yeah. And so I said, what would it look like for, you know, what we are able to do, to pour back into the community, to be able to bring that dance and that music into the parks, and that be the entry point to say, hey, maybe I need to, you know, start going to the park a little bit more, you know, and spending time with my kids or just my loved ones as a whole. But I'm excited to be able to bring this to the city and have people participate. It's free and open to the public, you know. We just want people to just come out and have a good time with us this summer.
Well, we started cleaning up for you this morning at 10 o'clock. the Friends of Sherman Park is in the process of being organized, and I'm one of the coordinators of that because when I found out that Sherman Park was the only park that didn't have a Friends organization, you know, and what the Friends organization do is what was not in the budget for the county to do, and not within the man, you know, the manpower is not available. We only have like one person responsible for this whole Sherman Park. Today we went over and, you know, we did a lot of weeding, took out a lot of the weeds and picked up the paper and recyclables and stuff. And it was a great occasion. You know, we had great conversation. I met some great people. At the same time we were doing that, there were other organizations meeting in the park. Like there was MICA and some healthcare organizations. I can't remember exactly all of the names right now. But I did take some photographs of them, and I put them on my Facebook page, because what we want to do is make the park safe and clean. And there's a campaign called Reimagining Sherman Park. And so when I got involved in that, I was actually trying to have them refurbish the tennis courts because, you know, I played tennis, and back in the, all the way back in the 70s, we were playing on Sherman Park. That was our home court. And now it needs a little repair. And so I'm going to be involved with the Friends group. And a lot of people are interested. In fact, one of the members of Sankofa, Queen Mother Yakini Shabaka, lives in Sherman Park. And she was at our first meeting of the Friends group last week, actually. And she's going to be involved. So
nice.
We're going to collaborate. And I'm so glad that Kothi is going to be in the park. We're going to have jazz in the park. And we're going to do some things about what needs to be done, like keeping it clean, and the lighting needs to be, changed as well, made better. The traffic around the park is another concern. And, you know, we have a list of about 10 things that we're going to work on. But the most important, too, is keeping it safe and clean. And we're going to make sure that when you guys are going to be dancing, we're going to have that well manicured. So you just have to point out where you're going to be, and we'll handle it.
Yes. Yeah.
We were talking earlier about basically the physique of those who are dancers. And we have all been introduced to the programs that are featuring celebrity athletes, as well as them in the role of dancers. And I think that has been really an eye-opener for many of those audiences who are observing professional athletes, but still having the ability with some instruction to do some pretty incredible things on the dance floor. What are your thoughts about that, Mr. DeMar, and those athletes and dance?
Dancers are athletes. There's a quote that says dancers are the athletes of the gods. I had the opportunity to go to Chicago to see what they're doing. It's called the Legacy Dance Project, which is centered around some of the oldest Black dance companies in the city. And they all were on the same bill that evening. And the person who I was with, they asked me, you know, what is it that you love about Black dance? And I said, You get to see Black folks in their godliness. And they were just like, wow, I never really thought about it in that way. But, you know, that comes from that mindfulness, right, to be able to think about what it means to take care of your body and the way that you pour in back into your body because of that meditation and, you know, and all of the spiritual aspect of it and the way that it feeds you physically and emotionally, you know, and communally as well. But dancers are athletes. You know, no one can just jump on a stage with Kofi and think that they're going to be able to hang without conditioning their body. You know, we have tons of pictures in the archives of gorgeous photos of dancers. You know, I think about this beautiful photo of one of our alums. Her name is Trina Gandy.
I love her. Go ahead.
Yes.
Yeah.
You remember Trina, beautiful dancer. And she has a beautiful photo of her her arm like just up in the air grazing, and she's sort of throwing, like having this palm in her hand, and like her knee is lifted and her foot is flexed and the technique is there. But like you can just see like every muscle that's literally being shined, you know, from the stage light. And I'm just thinking to myself, you know, that takes so much athleticism to be able to do that, mm-hmm. right? And also just the conditioning that we go through. You know, it's the stamina. You know, our shows are, you know, sometimes hour plus. You know, and a lot of the things that we do is, a lot of the traditional work that we do is very high energy and up tempo. So, you know, if you ain't conditioning your body, you know, you probably be somewhere on the side wheezing or passed out. So you got to make sure that you got that body in shape. But, you know, a lot of people love dance, specifically what we offer, because it's a different way to engage with fitness. You know, I've heard many people say, like, I don't really like going to the gym, but I come to a Kofi class, you know, and I'm able to get my sweat on. I'm able to get that full body workout because it employs the entire body, you know, and even with just the thinking that comes with what it is that you're engaging in, right? You know, it takes so much energy. So, you know, if you commit to it, it will love you back. It will definitely love you back. And, you know, you be all nice and cut and whatever your fitness goals will be if you're consistent with it, you know, for the summer and all of that. So, yeah, dance is very athletic.
I think we have a caller on the line, Sister James.
You might see him. I don't see him.
Oh, yeah. Or maybe that was you. Okay.
It might have been me coming back in.
Okay. Yeah, Lynn Swan did it for me. He played with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was a wide receiver back in the day when I was playing college football. And he was a legendary football player, but he also danced. I don't know if you're probably too young to remember Lynn Swan, but he was a dancer. And he played, I think he was at USC, Southern California. And then, yeah, he went in, he was a dancer. And the dancing actually helped him be a better football player as a wide receiver.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They make a lot of football players take ballet.
Is that right?
Yes. It's not something that is widely known, because I just think about what people sort of perceive of athletes and how we uphold athletes, specifically in American society. But, you know, yeah, they take ballet class. If you notice, they always make sure to have athletes on, you know, those dancing shows like Dancing with the Stars, because they know that a lot of those skills that they learn training to get on the field, so you don't play the game, can be employed on the dance floor. They can be transferred to the dance floor.
Mm-hmm. You know, there were a number of groups, like I said, at Sherman Park earlier today, and I talked to Lisa Jones of the of MICA, and she was telling me about the various organizations organized to support, you know, inner city education. And I'm just wondering, what can we do to support you? And I'm assuming that that's one of your intentions to expand dancing into the public schools, like to support the arts in public schools. What would you like the community to do to support you in that effort, given that you are the artistic director for Kofi?
I think the most immediate thing that I can think of is, you know, being able to come out and support what the company is currently doing, and that is with these classes, first and foremost. We understand that, you know, with the pandemic, money is tight, and I really pushed hard for these classes to be free and open to the public. You know, we'll have information out in regards to if you want to give a donation. But, you know, that's first and foremost. You know, the company has been around, but, you know, for the past few years, it's been in a very major rebuilding and restructuring phase. And, you know, we recognize the importance of what Kofi can do for the city. So, you know, we would love to be able to expand, you know, this programming. And I already, you know, I've been talking to people about, you know, what this will look like for summer 22, Mr. Robinson. You know, more so thinking about structures and institutions, right? I would love for Kofi to have more of a major presence within Milwaukee Public Schools. But even if it's not Milwaukee Public Schools, even thinking about what a dance company can provide, because what I have been very much interested in is that understanding of how dance is connected to so many other facets of Black life. I think about history. I think about, of course, culture, you know, and all of it is running very much in tandem with where we are currently. So, you know, I'm thinking about really innovative ways with curriculum to talk about the importance of dance, you know, and understanding that, you know, most people don't know that, you know, Mahalia Jackson was the person who would sing before, you know, Dr. King would do his speeches, right?
Right.
And mm-hmm. what that in turn would sort of, you know, encourage him to give that word that everyone needed to hear at that time. So I'm thinking about dance in that way, and you know, and innovative curriculums and things like that. You know, of course, we're a nonprofit organization, and you know, primarily what we do is grant funded. You know, I think about the idea of what would it look like to have a small, like a large group of Black folks and be able to be consistent donors for Kofi. You know, even if it's one of those things where, you know, people are committing to like $5-$10 a month, because that really ensures that people really support in the best way that they can. And even if that means that it's keeping like a book a stamp in the office, mm-hmm. you know, it's keeping our lights on, you know. It's with curriculum, it's with a consistent donor base, and it's also about, you know, supporting the company with the programming that we want to provide, and also being able to hear the voices within the community about what it is that they want to see from Kofi. I'm very intentional about that. And, you know, this is a great way to start it, you having me on the show. And, you know, we'll see, you know, what else happens. But
I'm so glad you could make it.
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
I'm just saying, I'm so glad that you could make the show. At first I was thinking maybe we didn't have enough time to get you on. And, you know, the 27th is coming up, and we wanted to give you that platform. And I'm just so glad that Dr. James was able to reach out to you, and you were able to be available for us.
You're welcome. I mean, you two are amazing. Y'all definitely stayed on me, because I have been doing all the things within the past few weeks to trying to get this outdoor class series going and all of the other work that we have going on. But I appreciate you all for just saying like, hey, you know, we still got the show, we got a slot for you, DeMar, come on. So thank you, I appreciate it. I really, really appreciate it.
I'm just curious, are you able to reach back and capture some of the old dance legends? They're no longer dancing, but I remember I could, like you mentioned Trina, and you mentioned Felicia, and there was a lady named Linda who was awesome, and her husband.
Linda Lacey Hodge.
Oh, Linda Lacey. That's exactly her name. And where is she now? Is she in Atlanta somewhere?
Like, no. Actually, Miss Lacey Hodge, who I was texting earlier this month.
Wow.
And you'll be really excited. Actually, I was texting her earlier this week. You'll be really excited to know that I think she'll be possibly in town the week when we'll be at Sherman. And I think she said she might come to class. But she actually lives in St. Croix with her husband.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's been almost 40 some years since I saw those people.
She owns a chicken farm. Miss Lexi Hodge has a really dear special place in our company's legacy. You know, she created Tom Kofi, our children's mm-hmm. performing ensemble. So, mm-hmm. you know, we love her dearly. Felicia, I talked to her on occasion. She was one of my first teachers. Trina actually called me. I wasn't able to get a hold of her. She left me a voicemail. But yeah.
Tell her I said hello when you talk to her. Tell her I said hello. And we have a caller. a caller coming in from Philadelphia, Dr. James. Do you see it?
I see 215-924. 215-924. You have a question or comment for our guest, Mr. Damar Walker from the Kothi Dance Company. Do you have a question or a comment? Well, we thank you for calling in and listening with us today. And Mr. Damar, sorry, we want you to continue.
Oh, yeah. I was just saying that, I've always loved the intergenerational aspect of Kothi. Our recent shows, we had people on stage that was as young as 6 and 7, up to, 60, shout out to Cat Moda, Victor Campbell, who was on stage rocking with us in 2018, 2019 for our concerts that we had, Ujima and Jubilee. But yeah, I've always loved that about Kothi, because that's what that healing is, right? Being able to tap into that community and being able to embrace people where they are, whether they are the precocious 6-year-old or they are the astute and wise, 61-year-old.
I went on Facebook about a year ago when I was developing a training format for conflict resolution. And I wanted to follow the Afrocentric way of doing that that I discovered when I did research about the San Bushmen on the Kalahari. And like I mentioned earlier, how they go through this 3-step process, because they, for them, if, unresolved conflict is a sin. So it's got to be resolved as a community. And so they use the circle process. And I was thinking, I could borrow that. And in my, because I was going to do like a 6-week training on conflict resolution. And I was thinking about having and the opening session, have Kothi do a dance, a dance that that suggests peace and ease, or conflict transformation. And I didn't know if you had anything in your repertoire that would fulfill that. I'm sure there is, some kind of dance that depicts peacemaking. But I was thinking, and I actually went on Facebook and I tried to get in contact with someone from Kothi to see if that was a possibility.
Yeah, I don't know what happened, but we're here now. And, I will say that sometimes, even when we don't realize that we're doing it, we're doing it. Because when we're able to come together, whether it's through these cultural practices, right? So much of what you mentioned, that solidarity, that peacemaking, it just manifests. And I think about that specifically with the recent works that we've been able to produce. We produced a concert in 2018 entitled Ujima, based on the Kwanzaa principle. And that's collective work and responsibility, right?
Yes.
In order for people to really be able to own that, right? I mean, we got to be able to have some sense of peacefulness, right? Within and amongst each other, it's no different with Jubilee that we did for our 50th anniversary in 2019, where, we sort of did this chronicle of our people's history and the telling of, our people coming through the Middle Passage and the way that we show up to create home wherever we are, because, so much of our history has forced us to be in transit or be transported. Right.
Yes.
So, that means, how do we create that peace? How do we create that home within ourselves? A lot of it is through these cultural practices, Mr. Robinson. But, I'm always open to the idea of what that looks like to be something a little bit more intentional or in line with what it is that you're mentioning. But, you know, creating new work is a beautiful thing, and to be able to have people that will be able to get in the studio to get all that creative juice flowing is a beautiful thing. You know, I want to acknowledge, you know, my team, Kumasi Allen, who's our musical director, who actually used to be in Tonkosi when he was a kid.
Wow.
Our associate artistic director, Sonia Thompson, you know, Caribbean woman from the islands, from Jamaica, just a beautiful, gorgeous spirit on stage. Mm. You know, Keon Sykes, you know, who's also a part of our music team. And we just are a really blessed crew. And I'm just thankful that we're still able to continue this work in this time and in this city.
Well, Mr. Walker, I haven't heard Charles mention to you, which has been his big recent platform around co-parenting and fathers parenting their children. But it seems like Kothi could be certainly a great avenue for father or parenting through dance, which gives an opportunity to learn history and do something together. What are your thoughts about that?
I think it's a beautiful thing. What's beautiful right now, like I keep saying, within sort of the consciousness of where we are in the country, is that, you know, Black folks are, like you said, Mr. Robinson, reimagining, right? So, you know, if there's anything that Black folks have, we definitely have beautiful and vast imagination. So, you know, the possibilities are endless. You know, I think it takes a concerted effort to really tap into, you know, what people are doing. I often say that so much of what we do is very siloed sometimes in the city, just based on a lot of, you know, structural things. Mm-hmm. But what I will say is that, you know, it's going to take, you know, me coming to like the Sherman Park event and being able to meet someone like you to be able to invite me on a show like this. And, you know, if it comes to fathers, you know, and being able to be more in their children's lives and meeting them where they are, you know, we're all about it, because we definitely see the importance of family and how you create family with these cultural practices. Yeah. And I was even having a conversation about what would this look like for summer 22, where we did something that was centered around like daddy, daughter or son, or daddy children dance, you know, where, you know, I was talking to Kumasi, our musical director, about, you know, what would it look like for us to get some dads who'd be interested in drumming, and, you know, some of us teach some of their kids, you know, some dances, sort of similar to how people think of like daddy daughter dance, and very much centering it in our cultural practices. Yeah. But that comes from that imagination and being able to think a little bit further and more expansively. But the possibilities are endless, and, you know, I'm open to the conversations and seeing, you know, what can manifest from them.
Well, Mr. Walker, we're at that time as we're beginning to wrap up. I need to remind us that sponsors are welcomed. Do you have a service you want others to know about? Have you written a book we need to read? Consider becoming a sponsor. Email the Black Reality Think Tank at Sankofa_think@outlook.com. Contributions to support our broadcasting efforts can be made to Cash App, $Nirvana, INSTI, and PayPal, Sankofa_think@outlook.com. If you have a question or comment that you didn't have time to call in and you'd like us to get your information, Our email address is sankofacouncilmke@gmail.com. We are
Dr. Jane.
Yes.
I want to make sure that I plug Kofi on socials. Is that okay?
Yes.
Please do so. Go ahead.
You got 30 seconds.
Yes. So you can follow Kofi on Facebook at Official Kofi Dance Company, and we are on Instagram at Kofi Dance Company for all of your latest news on the company. Kofi is spelled K-O-T-H-I. That's K-O-T-H-I.
Thank you for joining us today. I thank also the Sankofa Council for its support of this program and for sharing their vision for unity following Afrocentric principles and helping us to learn and use those principles in our lives. We look forward to bringing to you more programs that we hope you will enjoy.